Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, happy we have a break from the stress that is football week, I guess.
Yeah, I was officially done with football by the time the final whistle blew last Saturday. I don't know about you, but I was ready to go.
I think I was pretty much midway through the second quarter. I actually turned off the game. I couldn't bring myself to do it, and I hate doing that. I don't like to be that guy, but it was really depressing.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, I was too busy, you know, getting into Twitter altercations with people, but we won't talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, if I didn't have like a job where I had to like watch the other games that actually mattered, I would maybe be more like open to sitting through it and stressing myself out over a game that we were clearly not going to win from the jump, but. I was like, you know what? There are many more important things going on in the college football world right now, and me like lending my attention to that just did not seem like it had any kind of payoff.
Yeah, I again cannot blame you there one bit. I've been writing about the season kind of is a bit of a postmortem and what went right, what went wrong. I know a lot of others have as well. I don't think we're ever going to get an answer on this defense. I really wish we would, though. And maybe if it's not now, maybe if it's not next year. At some point, I want to know what the hell happened. Because I think that's really what's lingering for everybody is that, you know, the Dungy injury was just kind of expected, even if it came in a different way than we expected. I think that the defensive collapse was not something that really was on anybody's radar. And between that and the Clemson game and all these things kind of coming together, I think is what has created so much unrest amongst the fan base, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I mean, if we had just finished 4-8 as we did, but things kind of kept on looking like they did against Miami and NC State and those other games, I think it would have been one thing. You could have said, you know, we got really lucky. We probably should have won another game or two, but, like, every game was close. It would still have sucked, but it wouldn't have sucked like this because the last three games really made it seem like we had been doing something with like it had been kind of smoke and mirrors with the defense especially. And I mean, maybe that's the case. What happened in those last three games screamed coaches figured out something. And I'm not good enough at breaking down film or reading defensive coverages to figure it out. But something that started with Wake. And then continued the last two games. And granted, like, you know, all those teams have talent. Wake's, you know, a really solid team. Lamar Jackson played for Louisville. BC's been really good against a lot of people, so it wasn't like they were just beating us. But something with three very different teams, too, they all identified a critical weakness, and I think depth's a part of it. I think our lack of big plays on defense is a huge part of it. We had been talking about the lack of turnovers that we had been creating. I mean, I think they forced four in ACC play total, one of which was on special teams, and one of which was Eric Dungy stripping a defender after he had been either picked off or fumbled.
Yeah, so it's a take back.
Yeah, we really created two turnovers on defense in the entirety of the ACC play, which is not going to work. I mean, if you look at we bring up Bill C a lot, and I know the S&P ratings are what they are. But if you look at the five factors that create those ratings that are like the five, basically the bedrock of what makes a good college football team, it really tells you all you need to know about what this team struggled with. Efficiency, we clearly were not an efficient offense. Defense, we were for a bit. It fell off. Explosiveness, we didn't really do either well. Like, we could hit some deep pass plays when Dungy was in, but after that, that kind of dried up. The running game got better as the year went along, but it wasn't enough to make up for the lack of Dungy. And on defense, we still give up big plays and a pretty high mark, and we didn't make them. We didn't force turnovers. We didn't, create opportunities for our offense. Field position, our return game was good for a while, and we didn't get many big plays from Sean Riley after the first half of the season, and our punting game was good pretty much all year, so no real complaints there. That was probably the only side of that was, pretty good. And then finishing drives, obviously, has been an issue for years. Those factors, like, you could argue that out of, like, if you take all five factors and divide it up, five on offense, five on defense, we were, like, probably good-ish on one and maybe, like, passable on another, but none of them was, like, a strength, and that's a problem. You need to at least have some strengths in there. So those are pretty telling. I think, you could argue against advanced stats, but like if those are the five things that go into a winning college football team, according to at least Bill C, who I think is very bright and knows what he's talking about, Syracuse's weaknesses kind of lend to that those talking points.
Yeah, I think that puts it as nicely and as informatively as possible about why this didn't work out. Again, it's not to belabor this season or anything like that. I think what we're trying to do on the site, at least, is kind of help us pivot to next season and, you know, I think conservative optimism, perhaps. But, yeah, like I mentioned, if there's one thing that I would like more information on from somebody, and I know we're not going to get it from Dino Babers because he's just a very close-to-the-vest type guy, we're not going to get an answer on this defense necessarily. I think it does raise a lot of questions about what exactly was found out. The thing is, like, if BC had like, a very mobile quarterback, like, Darius Wade can run, but not to the extent that Lamar Jackson can or John Wolford can. Like, if we had seen, like, a third straight mobile quarterback just tear us apart and all that in that game, I would have said, okay, the answer is mobile quarterback. But, like, that's not what beat us in the game against BC. Against BC, receivers were wide open. There was a good, you know, 10-yard cushion right in the middle of the field for any receiver, especially the tight end. A.J. Dillon literally did whatever the hell he wanted, and so did anyone else who ran the ball. I just don't know if there was anything. I mean, and again, like, I can reference Julian maybe, who might be able to shed a little more light, but I don't necessarily, from what I've seen from him, it doesn't necessarily seem like he knows exactly what it is either, and that's not a knock on him. That's just a testament to, like, how oddly and completely this defense kind of collapsed in a way that if we had seen this all year, I would have it would have made more sense. But because we didn't see it for so long this season, it's strange that with not really much on the personnel side changing from like week 8 or 9 until the collapse against Wake, like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, and that's what makes me think that there was something identified on the defensive side. Offensive side, it's very easy to figure out what happened. Dungy got hurt. Like, and unfortunately, that's not a great sign. Right. Hopefully, he can finally make it through 12 games. And the one thing I will say is we're you know, all but certain that it was concussions the last couple of years. This wasn't a concussion. This was like another injury, just like a normal injury people sustain. So hopefully.
Well, normal if you aren't, you know, if your number isn't called 15 to 20 times a game.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a thing that will necessarily be like a lingering issue.
Right.
He had surgery, apparently. I think we found that out today, right?
Late last night. Well,
okay.
Today, your time. Last night, my time. I saw him tweet it at like 10 p.m. my time last night.
Fair enough. So very late. I wasn't already asleep, but I didn't see it. But yeah, so hopefully that means he'll return, and hopefully we get at least another majority of a season, and hopefully Tommy DeVito is ready to go. And honestly, Rex Culpepper I thought looked pretty good. He averaged 8 yards an attempt. Like, that's not bad. He threw for 2 touchdowns. The problem is he didn't get a lot of help. The running game was, again, like, better, but like the defense just never put us in a position where we were going to have a shot. Thank God for Steve Ishmael, who bailed us out, but I thought Culpepper was okay. Obviously, not. I don't think he's going to be competing for the starting job next year. That's going to be Dungy's to lose. And obviously, we're going to be probably grooming DeVito, and hopefully he can get some time next year that, you know, isn't because Dungy's hurt.
Yeah, let's make with the blowout wins. That way we can get
that'd be nice. Some reps. And next year's schedule should be more well set up for that.
So there's a little more of a I guess it depends on how the ACC schedule shakes out, but there's a little bit more of a warm up. I do feel like we get to ease into things a little bit in the first three games. We eased into things a little bit this year, but obviously, you know, facing your former defensive coordinator, former defensive coordinator and head coach, in a game where he seemed hell bent on winning, definitely doesn't help matters. But in general, yeah, I think Culpepper actually, like, I know I wrote the piece about Mahoney's weird legacy, and that's something that, like, was several years in the making. I think a lot of people kind of breezed right by him once we had DeVito on board. Then a lot of folks saw him in action and saw that, like, you know, he wasn't necessarily, you know, that crisp or fluid, but he did have better arm strength than Mahoney. His accuracy seemed to get better you know, comparatively from the Louisville game to the BC game. But obviously he didn't have like an amazing performance. He still ended up, you know, with one of the better freshman passing totals in school history, which is weird. Granted, you know, freshmen didn't play until about the 1970s. But yeah, he still threw for over 500 yards this year, threw for 280 against BC. Some of that in garbage time, but nonetheless, like, everyone is so focused on, like, what Eric Dungy did as a true freshman, they forget, like, that's a very atypical thing, especially for a three-star guy, to be able to just show up and, you know, really electrify a team and a crowd and all that. I think Culpepper, while it would have been great to have a lot more from him, just, you know, to help us compete at the same level we do with Dungy, it's unrealistic to think that a freshman's really going to be able to step in and deliver that kind of performance, especially given what the defense was really not helping us with either.
Yeah, I mean, if you told me when we were still playing like pretty well that Dungy would be out for the final game of the year, and this is, you know, also when BC looked more mediocre, that Dungy would be out for the BC game, but Culpepper would throw for 280 and two touchdowns, we'd run for almost 5 yards a carry, I would probably tell you that we would have a very good chance of winning that game.
Yeah.
The problem, there were just a lot of drives that didn't go anywhere. So some of those, and obviously Ishmael, were, you know, accounted for way more than half of his passing yards, which isn't like the super sustainable, but I'm not going to knock him for what was his first start and first big performance. And with Mahoney, obviously he didn't play in this game. You know, he was a walk-on quarterback. Not every walk-on quarterback's Baker Mayfield. I think he'll go down remembered, you know, pretty well, all things considered. It wasn't like we ever really expected him to be a, you know, focal point of this program. But overall, like, I think Mahoney's probably a guy who became easier to prepare for when you knew he was going to be the guy, versus, like, he came in, when he comes in the middle of games, he's, like, such a change of pace from, like, pretty much anyone else. He's such a unique player. I think that probably accounted for his struggles against Louisville.
Yeah, I definitely buy that. I think that, you know, once the script was kind of written on Mahoney, everyone kind of figured him out. It still doesn't explain, you know, how the half-to-half change against Wake, or the, like, you know, random game against Pitt last year that still, like, goes down as one of the weirdest, like, statistical outputs or feats by any player on any college football team. Because I still don't understand exactly how it happened, and I would bet that if you replayed that game, you know, 100 times, that it would never happen again. But nonetheless, the quarterback situation probably gets a little bit better next year, if only because I think we have, you know, the use of both Culpepper and DeVito if something were to happen to Dungy. I feel like at this point we have enough notes on what not to do with Dungy that hopefully those are considered and followed a little bit more closely. But as we saw this year, you know, it was another year of saying Dungy would run less. Dungy ran even more. He was our leading rusher. He had almost 600 yards of yard. Well, you know, had almost 1,600 yards on the ground. Was definitely, you know, a driving force for this running game. But to be honest, like, I did feel like when he wasn't running as much, that the run game was actually better in a lot of ways. I know Mo Neal, you know, second straight year, he averaged over 5 yards a carry. When he was given consistent carries and consistent runs, whether it was up the middle or around the end, he really did seem to excel. And I hope that we see, I mentioned this in the running back kind of postmortem article on Thursday. I hope that he gets more burn, you know, Dante Strickland, whether he stays at running back or not. Like, when we started using him more to his skill set, I feel like we got a lot more out of him as well. I just think we have capable backs on the team right now. We have a couple coming in for 2018. I'd like to see us be able to rely more on a traditional running game, and then, you know, Dungy becomes in case of emergency, break glass option, and one where he's probably a little bit more effective, especially as a passer, where he kind of backslid a little bit, though I wouldn't necessarily pin that all on him.
Yeah, I think if you can take away one positive of the last couple of weeks, it is the Mo Neal slash the running game. I think Mo definitely showed, even more so than I thought he would, like, the ability to read his holes and run between the tackles, more so than earlier in the year and last year, when he was kind of just, like, you know, your big play back that you hope would break one out, but otherwise he wasn't doing much. Like, Mo just had really good runs up, like, on normal running plays. He was getting, you know, nice chunks of yardage, and it wasn't all just big hitters. So I'm interested to see what the dynamic is next year with the running game and the offensive line. I thought played a lot better the last couple of weeks. It's almost ironic that it was like the biggest problem for the first half of the year, but we won some games. And then the offensive line play, I mean, we've been saying since Clemson, like, the second half of the year, the offensive line played a lot better, at least to my eye. Obviously, there were still issues. It wasn't great, but it was pretty decent. So hopefully that transfers forward. I think it will. I think we got a lot of big game reps for guys who probably weren't even slated to start next year. So as we said coming into this year, hopefully without, you know, we don't get derailed by injuries right out of the gate like we did this season. But that is a positive. And you shouldn't like undersell that, because that should be something that moves forward. Assuming that Tennessee doesn't end up hiring Dino Babers because they can't get anyone.
Which at this point, like, if you are Dino Babers, why would you want the job that nobody else wants?
Oh, that job's just super toxic.
Yeah. Like it's
yeah,
it's,
that was mostly really a joke. I don't think we're actually going to get a look, because I think Tennessee fans are out for like legitimate blood. And while, like, I mean, even the Syracuse fan base, like, not everyone's thrilled with what's gone on, you know, some for decent reasons, some for not. But I think we can pretty safely say that, you know, because we won 4 games 2 years in a row, we are probably going to have our coach next year, fingers crossed.
Yeah, it sounds about right. While we're still here in the first half of the podcast, the football half, for those of you who'd like to fast forward to the basketball side of things, I don't know why you would want to, but that's a thing some of you do.
I kind of know why they want to.
I mean, I guess I kind of know why they want to, but nonetheless. Dan, before we move on to basketball, why don't we talk a little bit about 2018 schedule? I know I had that article up on Thursday, today, just kind of going through all 12 opponents, maybe some like very preemptive, you know, odds of victory. Were there anything that stuck out to you as incredibly wrong in there? I know a couple people thought I was a little too high on certain games. Are there games that you would maybe be more bullish on than I was?
I'm looking through now. I mean, at BC, like, who knows what BC's going to be next year. They could build on this season, but they have done this a couple times and haven't really built on it, so they could also backslide. I feel like Adazio is kind of destined to be on the hot seat his entire tenure.
That's fine. And
he won't be for this year, because he's had a really nice turnaround and kind of developed somewhat of an offensive identity down the stretch, which was pretty similar to the offensive identity they had when they were successful a couple years ago versus like earlier this year when they were trying to run like a hurry-up spread type thing. So 55% at BC might be a little high based on what we've seen this year. FSU at 25%. I mean, who knows what Florida State's any. I mean, it's just so impossible to tell what Florida State will be next year. They should be talented because Jimbo Fisher's been recruiting like crazy there for 4 years, but they are about to lose their coach, as every indication seems to give, that Jimbo's going to run to Texas A&M.
Which is such a dumb move.
It's dumb. It's one of those things where, like, I've almost come around to, like, things must be so toxic there for him at this point that he has to do it, because he is not going quietly either. Like, their recruiting class is getting decimated. They've had, like, 4 or 5 decommitments in the last couple days. It's really ugly there. And I feel like if things weren't so bad, but he still thought he might want to leave, and he's also about, apparently the reported contract's like $7.5 million a year, so that's a lot. It just seems like things are really tough there. So now if they go hire Willie Taggart, I think they'll probably be pretty good right away again. I don't know. I'm not super sold that he'll go jump there. I mean, it makes sense for him. But Oregon has resources. Sure. So it's just tough to tell what that'll be. I think 25% at home against Florida State, considering it was a close game this year, and the Syracuse will hopefully be better next year, I think that's probably fair. Everything else, I mean, I can't really argue with it. UNC is going to be in a rebuild, but they should improve. We do get them at home, I think, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you can't get worse than they were this year.
Yeah, and then Wake should take a step back. I think Wake was pretty senior-laden. John Walford is gone after 5 or 6 years, and Cam Serene is gone after 12 years, and I think there are a couple other guys, big players, that are on their way out. So, yeah, no, I thought your estimations were pretty good overall. Just make a bowl, please. Like, please do that.
I don't think any program can kind of sustain, you know, this long of a drought. And we talked about this, you know, for several weeks now. It's Babers in some ways is paying for the sins of previous regimes. He's basically paying for the sins of the Schaefer regime, but then also the sins of the Robinson regime. It was just this, when you look at the last, you know, decade plus and see just how little opportunities the programs had in the postseason, it all just kind of becomes this boulder rolling downhill. And while Babers might get to, even if he gets to 5-7 next year, people are going to be very aggravated. Even if the product is better, once again, if the defense doesn't fall apart, if Dungy stays healthy, like, granted, if those two things happen alone, I feel like we should be able to make a bowl, but it's a tough league. We're in a tough spot, obviously, as a program, always have been. We just have happened to outperform at a time when it happened to, like, lodge in people's consciousness, if you look at the current fan base and age-wise, that there's just a perception that what happened in the late 80s through the late 90s is just something that should happen versus something that can potentially happen. And obviously there's been a lot more dynamics that have changed college football and geography and, you know, local economy since then, which could be its own podcast, obviously. So I'm optimistic once again that we can make a bowl, but it's non-negotiable that those first three games are wins against Western Michigan, Wagner, and UConn, and then we'll see from there. I think, again, there's enough change at our peer programs and institutions that I think we can get it done. But there's going to be an entire offseason to talk about that as we kind of look at the recruiting class and who leaves other schools and who changes coaches and you know, the like. So I'm not... I'm always happy to talk about the next year's schedule and all that, but I don't necessarily need to go down the rabbit hole so far as to start really kind of diving into the nitty-gritty of what could happen to SU next year.
Especially when in like 8 months we're going to do a full probably hour and 20-minute podcast on it.
As always, for the, I think it would be sixth straight year at this point.
Assuming we're all still here.
Mm-hmm. Some days it looks more likely than others.
I think I would put us at a solid like 92% chance of all being here next year.
All right.
I feel like that's a pretty... I don't just mean me and you. I think the world.
The world.
I think
yeah,
we're
yeah.
at like 92.
No, that's what I'm saying. Good. And I think 92 is fair for right now. All right. You know, why don't we do a little early halftime? Because I know everyone's, you know, chomping at the bit for us to talk about basketball here.
Works for me. I'm pulling up my Untap now. I don't think I had, like, that much unique stuff. I was in my hometown where there's, you know, not... And I didn't do, like, the beer bars there, unfortunately, all week. So the one really notable thing I hadn't had before this weekend, which I got a growler of Crazy Daisy, which is a Belgian triple from the Farmhouse Brewery up in Owego, New York, which was really good. Apparently, I haven't been to that brewery, but they do a lot of, like, cool stuff with, like, locally sourced... fruits and vegetables to make some really interesting brews that I really want to try with like stuff that you would not expect to be have you know beer made from, but that's what I ended up getting, and it was it was a really really good triple, really fully flavored, so I would definitely recommend that if you're in that area of upstate, which I imagine at least someone is listening to this.
Yeah.
And then last night I was at Gramercy Theater and I wasn't going to drink, but then I saw they had some goofy Iron Maiden brand beer that I hadn't had, and it was not very good, but I drank it. I don't think I would recommend that, but it was there and I hadn't had it before, so I felt like I was doing my due diligence, and so that was pretty much my full report. Everything else was like pretty standard stuff that I don't need to tell anyone about.
That's fair, man. Yeah, I do feel like the holidays, you know, you might start off optimistically like I'm gonna try all this stuff, and then you realize like it's the holidays, it's Thanksgiving, all I really want to do is just, like, have a couple beers with my meal so that I don't spoil dinner, but also partake in some merriment at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to go actually beer shopping, and my town has, like, a couple of beer bars, but they weren't ones we ended up going to when everyone went out, so it was just not, it didn't make itself into a good beer weekend. Hopefully, I should be going to some things this weekend, though, so I will try to do better.
Fair enough. Yeah, I planned it. Actually, I don't know how much I'm going to drink this weekend. We'll see. things that I drank. I didn't drink like a huge variety. My parents in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina, as I've mentioned. So like my access to things is kind of minimal, but did get a couple choice selections. Had some Jade IPA from Foothills, always a favorite of mine. Had some Westbrook Goza, which never gets old. Had some Deep River Pumpkin Pie Porter, which was actually pretty good. It wasn't overly pumpkiny or sugary. It was just kind of like the right balance there. I was hanging around New Bern, which is actually was the capital of North Carolina at one point and no longer is. But it's a cool little city, and they have some cool beer bars, a couple breweries. Had from Gizmo Brew Works, I had Black Hop Down. It was a black IPA. Had from Brewery 99, had a Configurant. It was their English IPA. And then over at the Brown Pelican, I had a Foothills Carolina Blonde, which you can find pretty much everywhere in the Carolinas. And that was really it. Just finished off my six packs of Westbrook Goza and Jade for the rest of my stay in North Carolina. So basketball, because again, that's why everybody's really here. We're looking all right, Dan. I mean, I don't think anything's necessarily changed since the last time we spoke in terms of what this team's fundamentally doing, but the Maryland game was a lot of fun. It was also terrifying, but we beat a pretty good Power Conference team to get to 6-0. We faced Kansas on Saturday. I don't think we're going to win that game, but as I, you know, kind of explained in our, like, one of just the overview articles we have for our matchup with the Jayhawks, a loss isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world if we look respectable doing it. No matter what, it's definitely going to, you know, boost our strength of schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect us to beat Kansas. Kansas is really good. Overall, like, I'm pretty thrilled with what we've seen so far. Like, I really am. I did not have super high expectations heading into the year. I thought this was a real rebuild year. We talked about this in our basketball preview. Like, I was looking for individual things and places to, like, see growth and, you know, hopefully we'd flirt with a tournament bid. I'm pretty sure this is a tournament team right now. Obviously, yeah. Things could change. We haven't been tested super, you know, a ton, but Maryland's not a bad team. I think Maryland will be, you know, I think they're a very much a peer team this year, and they'll be right around the middle of the pack in the Big Ten. I mean, I think Oakland should be really good. We blew them out. Toledo looks pretty good for what they are. We, you know, it wasn't a blowout, but we beat them. Texas Southern's usually a tournament team. We beat them by 13. So, like, these aren't, like, you know, things you're going crazy over. But beating Maryland, even at home, in a crazy game when they shot the lights out and we could not shoot a three for our lives, which is continues to be a thing.
Scary
thing. I mean, it's a scary thing. But, like, that's just not this team this year. I've been very impressed. The rebounding, I mean, this is probably the best rebounding Syracuse team in, maybe since 2012? I don't even remember how good that team was rebounding-wise. I know we had big guys who could do it. I don't remember how it was as a whole.
I don't think it was this good, if only because, like, I think the variance here is what helps the most, is that there's many guys who can do it.
Yeah, I mean, Howard's a good rebounding point guard. Brissett's a great rebounding wing. Dolezal is a much better rebounder than you would think for his, you know, frame. Sidibe and Chukwu are combining for, I think, a little over 10 a game. And they're basically, you know, if you treat them as a unit, like, the center position has just been very good for us this year. I think I'm looking at their numbers now. As a tandem, they're averaging around, like, 12 points and a little over 10 rebounds and actually like a steal and a half and 4.5 blocks per game, basically. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I mean, neither one can shoot a free throw at all, which is not great. But they're also, I mean, I think we've seen more offense out of both of them individually, too. Like, Chukwu was not ever going to be, like, a force, but he'll finish a lob. He'll get the ball inside and be able to do something with it. He's probably better offensively than we expected. We thought he would just be, you know, block some shots, hopefully grab some rebounds, use your fouls. Sidibe has been very good. I mean, the one guy who hasn't really shown a lot yet is Matt Moyer, but he's active. Boeheim's starting him for a reason. I do wonder if Dolezal ends up taking that starting job at some point, although we know that Boeheim likes to have his energy guys off the bench, and we know that Boeheim doesn't generally mix up his starting lineup, although he has shown some willingness to do it in the last couple of years. But overall, I mean, If the numbers look like they are now, and Battle's flirting with 20 points a game, and you get, you know, if you have two legitimate double-digit threats in Howard, who has been just been getting better by the game, and looks like a completely different player this year, and Brissett is great. Like, no complaints about him aside from, you know, I think his shooting will get better. As Boeheim said, he's not going to shoot 33% from the floor all year. He gets good looks. I mean, that's just... I'm very, very happy with what we've seen so far. Hopefully Kansas doesn't put, like, a total deadening on what that looks like. You know, hopefully we keep it close. But overall, I think you have to be pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like this team is better. Like, I've seen a lot of comparisons right away to kind of that, like, you know, oh, well, 2012 to, like, 2014 stretch where defense was our calling card. We had nobody that could really shoot the ball. Except for, like, you know, spot things here and there by CJ Fair, Tyler Ennis, whatever. Here, I feel like we do have right now, like, I wasn't expecting to be able to bank on Frank Howard as a scorer this early, but I definitely view him as the kind of, you know, complement to Battle, who is, I think, also playing better than we thought he would be able to play. I mean, we thought he was a potential lottery guy going into the season, and I think he absolutely has proven that and more. So between the two of them alone, I feel more confident in the shooters on this team than I did in any of those, 2012, 2014 teams. That includes even Trevor Cooney at the height of his powers. So I really like the fact that, you know, everybody seems to have a role on this team. Like, even Moyer, a guy who's only playing about 18 minutes a game, like, he seems like he's got a motor. He's able to, you know, make an impact on the boards. He's shown some things defensively, even if he's not really much of an offensive threat just yet, and he'll have to be by the end of his career. He is showing something in you know, small spurts. I think guys like Sidibe and Dolezal, guys that we thought that maybe would play a little more sparingly, are contributing more so in more minutes than we kind of banked on. So, you know, a big loss to Kansas could derail some of that. I think that, you know, some of these younger guys and even Frank Howard definitely get by on confidence and definitely get by on just kind of the fact that Boeheim is exhibiting the faith that's needed for them to be able to go out there and learn on the fly and all that. So again, hopefully Kansas doesn't put the type of hurting on us that could potentially derail that progress going forward. But I do think this will be an interesting test for, you know, the size we have. While Kansas is a little bit short on the bench front, they do have, you know, five players who score in double digits. They have a lot of NBA talent on their roster. Again, depth is an issue, but other than that, like, I think that they have enough players to beat us on the floor just because of how well they're shooting this year. And obviously, if you hit your shots, then you don't have to worry about what's been a very, very good rebounding team in Syracuse.
Yeah, it is interesting because Kansas has essentially been playing small ball, and like you said, depth hasn't really been a thing. They're playing six guys over 25 minutes a game. Five guys are averaging at least 13 points. Like, their rotations are very tight. Very kind of Boeheim-esque, to be honest. But yeah, they shoot the ball quite well. They're shooting 45% from three as a team. They have two guys shooting 50%. But three, if you get Mitch Lightfoot, but he's, you know, only playing 16 minutes a game. They're basically a small ball team. They're going to have some size because, you know, they are Kansas. They are recruiting at a high level. But it's definitely a different look Jayhawk team. I do think the difference will be, I mean, if Kansas doesn't shoot well, then that could open things up. I don't expect that because they've shot well all year. But if Syracuse's size can bother them, I think it will be interesting. Now, that being said, you know, Kansas is a top-ranked team for a reason. So, and I'm not going to predict any crazy upsets here. But it wouldn't shock me if Syracuse is able to keep it, like, relatively close, considering, I don't know if we have a spread yet, but the difference between what the two teams look like coming into the year.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas is just too talented to really... I think that right now they think they're too talented to get upset by us. That's not a knock on Syracuse. That's not to say Kansas is going to win at all. But it's to say that Kansas might be the best team on our schedule, depending on how you view UNC and Duke. They just have the right mix of size despite, as you mentioned, the small ball play, size, great shooting, veteran leadership. Like, this is something that you usually don't see a ton of from, you know, teams stacked with whether it's lottery picks or just a lot of top-tier and blue-chip talent. Like, Kansas has been able to retain talent and been able to really stock itself with a nice mix of experience from internally and as well as, you know, transfers over these last few years. So I think that, you know, Kansas, you look at what they did, and while you don't want to believe in the transitive property, you look at what they've done against the same opponents we faced, teams like Oakland, Toledo, and they've really, really, like, taken it to them. That, to me, is probably a bad sign for us. I just don't know if we're going to be able to play at a level of efficiency that we're going to need to beat a team like Kansas that can put up, you know, 80 to 90 points a game, and we just can't hit that number.
Yeah, I think we'll probably want to slow things down. I don't know. We're a weird offensive team. We're not built really well for the half court, but I don't think we want to get in a super running match with Kansas, especially, you know, if they have guys trailing the play and knocking into threes like Horder did a number of times the other night. I do wonder if we try to make things a little more deliberate and kind of drive the demon into the mud a little bit.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, so maybe. I mean, I'm not going to bet on Syracuse to win this game at all. I do hope that it isn't like a total laugher, because I think that would probably take away from, you know, the excitement a little bit. And I, you know, if we keep this one within, you know, 10 to 12 points, I think that would be a pretty good performance for Syracuse. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if Kansas blew us out given their talent, but I guess we'll see. Both teams, you know, it's very early in the year, so you really don't know what you're getting quite yet with the Syracuse team, especially because they are so young. And if anything, I'm excited to see how some of the young guys step up. I think we all feel pretty good about Brissett. He's, you know, played 40 minutes the other night, I think. So you kind of know that he's, you know, ready to be a full-time, you know, huge part of this team. Clearly the second or third best player. Can we get, like, a similar... can we see something from Adolazai or a Sidibe and, you know, just see like, okay, this guy can definitely play big minutes in huge games like this, especially for when we get down to ACC play, when obviously we'll have Duke and UNC and Notre Dame to contend with.
Right. I mean, we're rarely this young, so it's hard for us to find like a Syracuse comparison, but sometimes you do see young teams that get off to a hot start against poor opponents. Sometimes those younger guys get derailed because of just the length of season, the difficulty of opponents, physicality of the college game compared to most of the high school games. But, I mean, at the same time, a lot of these better recruits and a lot of our guys, you know, have been playing in the AAU circuit and have been playing against top talents and recruits. And no, it's not a complete, you know, completely analogous to the college game, but there's a lot of these players are better prepared for the rigors of the college game. You know, now more than they were probably, you know, 20, 30 years ago, before the AAU circuit got started and the sneaker circuit and all the other things that, hey, might not even exist in a year. Who really knows, given the FBI investigation that is ongoing. And not something we have to talk about here, because I think that nothing's really changed fundamentally as of yet. So, Dan, can I kind of mark you down for what? I think a 15-point loss, 10-point loss? What are we talking here?
I'll go 12. I'm going to be slightly optimistic. I'll go Kansas. I'm just throwing a random number out there. I'll go Kansas 82, Syracuse 70.
All right.
And I'll think it'll be, we'll hang around. We'll be like in the 8 to 9 point mark in and out for like most of the second half. And then I think Kansas will probably pull away at the end.
I buy that concept. I'm going to say Kansas 85, Syracuse 71. That sounds...
Fair enough.
I just think, like, they're a better shooting team than Maryland is. And we allowed Maryland to score 70 points on us.
Yeah. Definitely concerning, and I think a lot of that. I don't think we played poor defense. I think the defense is actually pretty good. They just knocked down a lot of shots that we're going to usually give teams, and most of it was Herter. And I think I tweeted within the first like 2 minutes of that game, like, he's going to have a big game. We all know this. He's a good player to start with. He's from up here. He's from upstate. He's not really the two that got away. We didn't really have a choice. We kind of handled it the way we had to. But, like, there was no doubt in my mind he was going to have a big game.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we let him have a big game. We were able to kind of lock down everybody else. That's not going to be an option here, given the, you know, kind of varied scoring threats that this team has. You know, I mentioned in the kind of brief kind of TV and history overview, preview thing, whatever you want to call it, you know, five players scoring double digits. Malik Newman's the lowest of those at 13.5. And then did we decide how we're going to pronounce his name here? Do we have a pronunciation guide on the European import?
Svi Mykhailiuk?
Yeah, him.
He's been there for a while. He's like one of those. He's weird because I think he got to Kansas at 16, so he's a 20-year-old senior. He's like the anti college basketball player.
Interesting.
He's a senior. He's a 4th-year player for them. He is younger than I'd say a good chunk of the top freshmen.
Huh.
College basketball's fun.
It is. It's fun. It's weird. But yeah, he scores 18.2 points per game. He's also the player I fear the most here because he shoots 56% from three. And not only, it's not like he's just somebody just like, you know, chipping in a couple. I mean, he's 22 at 39. He's shot more threes than anybody else on the team. That's a scary player. Obviously, you can't beat the zone just by shooting threes, but if you're going to shoot them that well, maybe you can.
He's also 6'8", which is not great. When you have a 6'8" sharpshooter, you can get away with shooting over the zone a little bit. We'd much rather deal with like a 6-foot point guard rather than a, you know, a pretty long wing.
Right. But yeah, looking up and down like this starting lineup, it's definitely you're gonna fear all these guys. The one thing that maybe, and I have to look at the foul numbers. You could hope somebody gets into foul trouble because there's really nowhere to go. If they do, I mean, maybe Mitch Lightfoot, maybe Marcus Garrett, but in general, there's nowhere to go if they have to go past like the top six in this lineup. So, Syracuse doesn't have a ton of depth either. So, you know, playing a foul type game is never really going to be an advantage for us. But if we start seeing some whistles go, the opposite way, perhaps, that's really the one opening for Syracuse that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I'm looking at now. Graham doesn't foul very much. Doesn't look like any of them really get him a ton of foul trouble. Gerald Vick, who's a super athletic wing, maybe him. He has like 2.2 a game, but like, not, and Udoko Azubuki, or I believe that's how you pronounce his name. He's at around 2-something, too. So, yeah, no, these guys are pretty good about not getting into foul trouble, which they need, because, like, Garrett Lightfoot play a bit. I mean, Garrett plays, like, 25 points a game, 25 minutes a game. He's just not, as big a... He's not
the
only guy in that, like, 25-plus minute a game area that isn't averaging 13-plus points. So the five guys that they have, like, you know who their scorers are. So if they're going, like, long stretches with Garrett or Lightfoot, it takes away... some of their like overall scoring depth, but it doesn't really look like any of their big five getting a ton of foul trouble, which is good for them. I mean, this is a really interesting team. It doesn't look like your normal Kansas team. They have a pretty diverse set of talents. I haven't seen them play a ton yet this year. I saw part of that Kentucky game. Beyond even the Syracuse thing, I think this will be an interesting team to watch just as a general college basketball fan.
Yeah, totally agree. So I guess looking, I don't want to look too far ahead, but just looking at, do you think that how we play against Kansas will tell you how we're going to play against UConn the following Tuesday, or do you think that we can potentially rebound from a loss to Kansas, no matter how wide, and beat a Connecticut team that struggled to beat Columbia the other night?
We should beat a UConn team that struggled to beat Columbia the other night. I won't say that we know enough about this team yet to like just pencil it in, because we've had a couple of games against UConn teams that we should have beaten recently that we didn't. UConn really, like, if not for Christian Vital having probably, was his best game of his career, they would have lost to Columbia at home. Columbia is not a great basketball team by any stretch. They're like a middling Ivy League team, I think.
I think they have like one win.
Okay, maybe not even. I don't know who they've played.
Probably no.
So yeah, UConn's 5-2. They haven't been like super impressive getting there.
They beat Oregon.
they beat Oregon, which was good. And then they got handled by Michigan State, which you expect, and then they lost by about 40 to Arkansas. I don't know that Arkansas is going to be that good this year, so I don't know what that all means. They beat Colgate by 12, they beat Stony Brook by 8, so I mean, it's tough to really know, because Michigan State's is great. I'm not going to give them too much crap for a 20-point loss to them.
Right.
Arkansas by, it was 102-67, and then Columbia, they won by 4 in overtime. Those are not good performances. So hopefully we can, if we do lose handily to Kansas, we can rebound and, get a big win at MSG. I will be there, I believe. I need to figure that out. I don't have tickets yet, but I don't know why I wouldn't be there.
Press pass.
probably too late for that. I didn't even think about that. I should have done that earlier in the year. But anyway, that's another thing I think we can look forward to. If this is a bad Kansas game, and Kansas is great, so I'm not gonna. I think we should probably avoid super hot takes if we lose by a lot. But seeing how a team that this young, that hasn't faced real adversity yet on the court, rebounds against a pretty talented UConn team, I think will be something to really see, especially when we get to those crazy, stupid ACC turnarounds that Bahan plays about every year. It could be a decent measure of how we might handle those.
Yeah, I would love that. And looking at Columbia's schedule here, there's a reason they're 1-5, but there's also not. They're 1-5. Their one win is against, who is this?
Long?
Team? Is that Long? It's not Long Beach. No, it's Longwood Lancers, who are...
Longwood. Are they even... Longwood's what, D2?
It seems like they're in the Big South.
Is Longwood... They're only 0-2. How's that possible?
I don't really know. Since they're 2-5...
Oh, they were 0-2 at the time. Okay. Yeah. They were 0-2 when they played Columbia.
Right.
They're 2-5. They're in the Mid South.
Somehow, I couldn't tell you where they are.
I'll look it up while you're going.
Yeah, what their whole thing is. But yeah, they've lost to Villanova. They lost to Penn State. They lost to UConn. Army, which, okay, now we're getting a little debatable. And then they lost to Colgate. So if you lost to Colgate, I'm not really too confident in your program. That's not to hate on our one time rival too much. But it's to say that Colgate is not really that good.
Longwood University is in Farmville, Virginia, which is like
a place
central, like dead, literally like the dead center of Virginia.
Even more middle of nowhere than Blacksburg,
directly between Lynchburg and Richmond.
The more you know.
I'm going to look up where the nearest Denny's is, just in case we ever play them. Actually, we would never play them on the road, but
ever.
Not even a slight possibility. That was the first thing that popped in my head it's like an hour away. Yeah, we're definitely never playing them. Yeah. It's in Richmond. How do you have a closer Denny's in Richmond?
Huh. Linwood, what are you doing? Anyway. So yeah, now everyone knows who the Linwood Lancers are. You are now fully aware of Columbia's schedule so far. They face all the other teams you would expect them to face. Albany, Quinnipiac, Stony Brook, Navy. They face Boston College, which... How come we never face Ivy teams anymore other than Cornell? Or is it just because we face Cornell, we just don't want to, face the entire Ivy League? Because I looked the other day, we haven't faced Dartmouth since, 52?
It's probably that the Ivy in general, unless you're playing Harvard in recent years or those couple years of Cornell, you're probably driving your RPI pretty far down.
Right.
I will say I was extra rooting for Columbia the other night because Columbia is the nearest, D1 college basketball program to me right now. I live about not even a mile from there. So I would have probably gone and gotten a hat or something.
You just become a Columbia season ticket holder.
Yes, I'll start the Columbia SB Nation site.
Honestly, I've thought about it a couple times. When I was in San Francisco, I thought about stumping hard for USF. Not the Bulls, but the Dons.
The Dons. Shout out to who went there? Will Chamberlain?
No.
It
wasn't Oscar either.
Bill Russell?
Was it Russell? I think it was Russell.
We're very good basketball fans.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Russell. I'm almost positive. It was, I mean, admittedly, that was like super before our time.
Yeah, I mean, this is back when they were good. Yeah, it was Bill Russell. He went to San Francisco from 53 to 56.
Yeah, and they made like two Final Fours.
Yep. I think they won a title.
Yeah. I think they might have won two titles.
Yeah, he won two, 55 and 56. How about that?
At the time, you realize that the University of San Francisco has more NCAA championships than you. Damn you, Keith fucking Smart.
They are Tyler Olander University.
Way to go.
Shout out to We Take the Stairs.
It all comes full circle. but yeah, no, I thought about like stumping for them until like the tickets are like not cheap, and they weren't like when I was there either, like when San Francisco was at least like mildly livable. If you made like less than $100,000 a year. But yeah, like it was not easy. I never went to a game because they were super expensive.
Why? What, how does it make any sense?
Just because, like, they're just like small Catholic school, and they just decide they want to charge like $50 a game. And like, I wasn't going to that crap.
Do they like? Do people go?
Apparently.
Like, there's something to be said to like, you know, filling the arena and selling some pretzels. Like,
I mean, I guess. I mean, the thing is though, like everybody that goes to school, like, goes to the games, apparently.
Okay, so that makes sense, but you would think, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why we're thinking so hard about University of San Francisco's strategies in terms of filling their arena, but still, it's a little weird to me, because I'm pretty sure most of those tiny schools you can kind of just go for, like, $10.
Usually, yeah. Although, you know what, no, another school that is the same deal, like, and they're in the same conference, I think, so I suppose it makes sense. LMU, same deal.
Like, maybe the weird small Christian schools.
Yeah, like maybe. I've tried, because like I was, when I used to work up there all the time, I was literally like less than a mile away from the arena, and it was like $75 to get in the door.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, Loyola, I get like when Loyola was scoring like 1,000,000 points a game back in the 90s. But yeah, that is weird to me. I would have never thought of that. I wonder how much it would be to go to a Columbia game. I don't even know where Columbia would play. Yeah, I assume it's somewhere on campus. I have no idea like where on that campus it would be, though.
I mean, they play football there, too, somehow.
Yeah, but I think that's... I don't know.
Where is that?
I don't know. There's no football field in Morningside Heights, I can assure you. I think they actually play in the Bronx. I think there's a field in the Bronx they go up to.
They play at Fordham?
I don't think they play at Fordham.
Apparently.
This is such a niche thing that no one listening to this is going to care about. It's actually kind of amazing. Yeah, Columbia University Baker Athletics Complex is in... It's
Robert Kraft Field. Oh, screw you guys.
Is it really?
Well, no, the football field is.
Oh, it's not in the Bronx. It's at the... It's just... it's all the way up in all the way up in Inwood. Like, all basically on right by the Bronx Hill, the Spite and Devil Creek that separates the Bronx from Manhattan. It's like as far north into Manhattan as you can go. So that's interesting. It's not really all that near campus.
No, although I mean it's still in Manhattan.
It is in Manhattan. It's in uptown Manhattan, but it's like a solid 100 blocks from Columbia University. But I guess that's, I mean, where else would you put it? I don't, there's no one near Columbia where you could have it. It's a pretty, you know, dense area.
Yeah, and they play basketball at Levian Gymnasium.
Is that probably closer to...
Maybe. Google decided not to give me a map on this one, but they gave me a map on the football stadium that's named for Bob Kraft, so...
Did Bob Kraft go to Columbia? I guess he probably, right?
I mean, he has money. That kind of makes sense, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah, this isn't telling me where Columbia plays basketball either.
Yeah.
The mystery. Maybe they don't. Maybe they just... They sent like a random 5 people up to UConn to play, and that's how it turned out.
It doubles as their volleyball. It's only a 2,500 seater. It says it's in New York City.
I mean,
obviously,
it's probably on campus somewhere. With 2,500 seats, it should just be, you know, stuck somewhere on that campus. But I don't know. I haven't really been inside any of the buildings, so I couldn't tell you. Nice campus though.
Yeah. Also, Bob Kraft went to Columbia and Harvard. Of course he did.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, yeah, it's basically, it's like on the northern part of Columbia's campus. Yeah, so probably not even a mile. It's like probably 3/4 of a mile from me.
There you go. There's your team to stump for. I Said I could pick. I could also try to stump hard for the 49ers down in Long Beach. If I wanted to drive to Long Beach and hit up Beachwood Brewing afterward.
There you go. Where this has been John and Dan adopt completely irrelevant college basketball teams, even though we have a pretty relevant one to root for already.
We do, but you know what? I mean, we have. We need to find, like, what's our other team on this podcast for basketball season? Because during football season, we have one that, like, everybody knows about and that is directly responsible for the return of the angry wave.
All right. I actually agree. I think we do need a pep college basketball team because, like, we don't really talk about Tulane basketball. Yeah. Nor should we.
Nor should anyone.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll keep track. We'll see how Columbia does. If they had beaten UConn, it would, like...
It would have been on.
It wouldn't even be a thing.
Yeah, I think let's keep an eye, because there's so many more options for us, like, hyper-locally.
Yes. I mean, Ike Fordham's not far from me. LAU-Brooklyn would be a fun one. Like, LAU-Brooklyn's super fun. I don't know if they're going to be good this year, but for that, like, stretch when they kept making the tournament, those games look so much fun to go to.
What are they, the Ravens, the Blackbirds?
Cool. Yeah, the Blackbirds, which is a cool, like, different mascot. That's where they had the, I've been to the gym now a couple times because of the tournament, which is where they played.
True.
Pretty nice little arena.
No, this reminds me of my idea. I might have mentioned on the podcast, and I know we're just like rambling at this point, but whatever. Reminds me of when I mentioned, I think I mentioned on the podcast where I was going to like just insert myself as like the South Bay Lakers beat writer. Just like start like showing up to games and just tell them like I was going to be press row whether or not they had one. Because the South Bay Lakers play at, they play in El Segundo, like really close to me. But I found out it's like more expensive to get into a South Bay Lakers game than it is to get into an LA Lakers game right now. It's $20 a ticket. It's $20 a seat if you want season tickets, which doesn't make any sense for a D League team.
Yeah.
Kind of silly. But, you know, if, again, maybe it's Long Beach, maybe it ends up being LMU. I can actually get into UCLA games for cheaper than I can get to LMU games. It's just then I need to get all the way over to UCLA, and as you may have heard, it's not easy to get into or out of the Westwood area on game day just because of where UCLA is located and where Pauly's located. It's not really fun.
Isn't that just like all of LA?
Well, yeah, but like this part in particular, like because Pauly's also like in the middle of UCLA's campus, like at least like for, like, you know, you're going to deal with traffic like when you go to the Rose Bowl, but like the Rose Bowl is also like set aside from the rest of Pasadena. You just kind of bank on it, and you make a day of it, you hang out in Pasadena. Like for the Coliseum, if you're going to UCLA football game, like it's not in the middle of USC's campus, it's outside of USC's campus. And if you park outside of the main lot, you can usually get on the road and get on your way in, you know, semi-reasonable amount of time for Los Angeles. Galen Center, nobody goes to UCLA USC basketball games, but if you did, Galen Center is also situated close to the freeway, away from things, so you could be able to get on the road potentially easily. But UCLA, Pauly Pavilion is literally in the middle of like the goddamn quad. It's really, really difficult to get to UCLA around rush hour, and it's very difficult to get out of there in a reasonable amount of time. So... For people who are in LA, I'm not sharing any new information with you. For those who are listening, let's see, most of you who are listening, this is new information. That's why nobody goes to UCLA basketball games anymore, except for students, because it is too goddamn hard to get on and off the campus area.
Yes. So this has been an impressive derailment, because we've actually had some like good basketball to talk about, and we ended up talking for, what, 15 minutes about just the most random schools.
That's fine. We actually did talk about SU basketball.
It's still early.
It is. It's very early. Whatever happens in this Kansas game is not going to change our season one way or another, unless we win, and then in that case, I'm going to go ahead and predict a Final Four just like the rest of you.
Yep, and then, you know, hopefully it doesn't turn out like our last big win in the sport.
Hooray.
I feel more confident with the Syracuse basketball program if they beat Kansas, that it being a real thing.
But we'd also know how to handle the success.
Yeah, I mean, we've been there before.
Right, numerous times. We've beaten Kansas before in stunning.
We've beaten Kansas like the last however many times we've played.
Twice.
I don't think Kansas has beaten us since like 2001.
Yeah, that was less than the
Because we beat Kansas twice when I was there. We beat them in the Johnny Flynn game, his sophomore year. Paul Harris had a big play, and then Johnny hit the shot, I believe.
Yep.
And then we beat them the year after, I think.
I don't know about that. Let me double check.
I think we beat them in a neutral. I think we beat them the year after as well. I could be wrong.
It says
no. I
it
think I'm missing
no.
them. In,
Orange Hoop
I'm,
says
I'm missing of them in Florida. We beat Florida like three or four times, like in a short span. We beat Kansas just. I think that was the last time we played them, the Johnny Flynn game, right?
Yep.
We beat them. We beat them in the national championship, obviously.
And then we lost them in 01, and then we beat them in 96.
Yeah, I was, all right. So I was mixing up Kansas and Florida. Florida, we played like a lot. Basically while I was there, I think we played them three of my 4 years, and we beat them every time.
Yeah, just needlessly. Although we
I don't know why we kept on playing them. It didn't really make any sense.
Well, we timed it well so that we didn't face like the championship teams.
Yeah, no, it was like right after.
Yeah, we oddly we faced Florida four times from 05 to 2011, including 08, 09, and 2011.
Yep. So three times while I was there,
and just once, my and just once at home.
Yeah, once was at Florida, once was at home, and once was a neutral site in Florida. I think it was like in Miami.
Yeah.
So it was basically a Florida home game, except that we had a lot of fans there too, because we always do.
We taken over. All right. Now with that final derailment, I think an episode that I thought was actually going to end early ended up going about a full hour.
Yep. Who knows how much basketball talk we actually gave you, but again, we'll probably have more to talk about after the Kansas game, because then we'll actually learn a lot. Maryland game was fun on Monday. Really enjoyed it. I'm pretty bullish. I'm growing. I was so cautiously optimistic heading into the year, and I don't want to like go like completely in the other direction, but I feel very good about the team. I now expect that this is a tournament team based on what we've seen so far, but obviously it's still very early and we've only played like one hugely, you know, prominent program. So we'll see.
Let's keep the as Kevin said in his article today, you know, we can be optimistic, but be like realistic about it.
Yeah, I don't think we're not like the ACC on fire, but I wouldn't be surprised now if we're like, you know, if we're the eighth best team in the ACC, I wouldn't be shocked. I don't know how much better than that will be, but that's a pretty good place to be for, you know, playing almost an entire new rotation aside from two guys.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Anyway, I hope everybody enjoys the Kansas game on Saturday. I may be watching with some alums, or I may just tether myself to my computer as per usual. Either way, I'm sure it'll be kind of fun. But Dan, thank you as always for joining. Much obliged.
Yep, hopefully everyone goes and tells us about what random low major we should adopt, and we can talk about them more than anyone wants to hear about.
Yeah, if you're a fan of a low major school, along with Syracuse or instead,
and we mean
Syracuse,
low major, not mid major. We're not rooting for UConn.
No, not UConn.
And other
or
similar mid majors. We want a low major.
Yeah, we want a team that really needs like that. You know, everyone could like get behind if they go like 9-33 and then 9-23. Sorry, and
one
then
of those
like,
great 16 seeds that you're like, this is so dumb.
Yeah, like this is the dumbest team. Like, you know, like a Lamar or like something like that. Like let's like names of people are always good to start with. For
a
real major
mascot, I think.
Yeah, banana slugs, lancers seem fun for Linwood. Like, so let's go with one of those. Like, give us your best. Give us your best low major team that we need to really follow all season.
Well, we can give you a solid 2 minutes on this stupid low major. We want to drive you crazy with a very obscure basketball team, and we want you to choose it.
Yeah, that's going to be the task now, despite the fact that we're in the midst of probably our biggest non-conference game in quite some time. It's cool. That's you don't listen to this for entirely analysis. I think there's a decent amount of jokes and garbage that you would come to expect with this show.
I would hope so. And if it's your first time tuning in, we only mentioned Tulane a couple times. You're in for so much more when we get to the actual off season.
Boy, AAC football preview show coming at you in about 7 months.
Very excited.
Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Go Orange.